The next topic is Mulkraj Anand's style. The problem of style is a crucial one for an Indian writer in English, and even major Indo-Anglian writer has had to give thought to it. Raja Rao has his own answer to the problem in the well-known foreword to Kantapura, while Narayan's views on the issue are expressed in his essay on English in India. Anand has given his views about English in India in his two long statements, Some Notes on Indo-English Writer, a paper presented at a seminar on Australian and Indian literature held in New Delhi in 1970. Anand makes a distinction between Babu or kind emperor's English and genuine Indian English used creatively for artistic purposes. The former is Pidgin English, the Higgledy Piggledy spoken English of India, or the artificial imitative writing of the completely anglicized Indian. The latter he describes metaphorically as Pidgin Indian, in which the words soar in the imagination like a pigeon in flight. He also believes that the Indian is likely to find it far more difficult to write good poetry in English rather than good prose, for unlike prose, which depends on reason as well as emotion, poetry depends a great deal on one's kinetic inheritance, and not many people can become other than themselves. Speaking about the motives behind creative Indian writing in English, Mulkraj Anand remarks, "It was the only language that came to hand in a difficult translation period, and we wanted to say our say immediately, notwithstanding the political and moral censorship that inhabited our own languages, and our writing in English is a part of the Indian cultural development and has its value if only as an interpretative literature of the most vital character." Anand's view of Indian English style recalls Raja Rao's memorable observation in the foreword to Kantapura, "We cannot write like the English, we should not. We cannot write only as Indians. We have grown to look at the large world as part of us. Our method of expression, therefore, has to be dialect, which will someday prove to be as distinctive and colorful as the Irish or the American. Time alone will justify it. The tempo of Indian life must be infused into our English expression, even as the tempo of American or Irish life has gone into the making of theirs. We, in India, think quickly, and we talk quickly. When we move quickly." Anand observes, "The psychology of Indian English is rooted in the Indian metabolism. Most Indians who speak or write English, even when they have been to Oxford and Cambridge or London, tend naturally to bring the hangover of the mother tongue spoken in early childhood into their expression. As a people, we talk quickly, walk quickly, and make a little go a long way. Unlike the Englishman who talks clearly on the stage, but generally puts the bit in his mouth when conversing, the Indian often gesticulates, moves his facial muscles, and is as fluent as an American or an Irishman. Not only does this general characteristic of dramatic utterance make us a rather loud, even noisy people, but the pull of our mother tongue leads to a heavy sugar coating of ordinary English words, phrases, and sentences, peculiarities which are congenital. I am not defending this unconscious use of Indian phraseology. It needs no defense because it is natural. I am merely cataloguing the phenomena to remove the impression that the Indian is deliberately violating the English language when he is unknowingly bringing the pressure of his mother's milk to bear on his speech. Anand examines the creative process involved in his own writing of the English language in the following manner. I found, while writing spontaneously, that I was always translating dialogue from the original Punjabi into English. The way in which my mother said something in a dialect of Central Punjab could not have been expressed in any other way except in an almost literal translation which might carry over the sound and sense of the original speech. I also found that I was dreaming or thinking or brooding about two-thirds of the prose narrative in Punjabi or in Hindustani and only one-third in the English language. This happened usually while I was writing my stories and novels. In the essays, I could myself write almost entirely in the English language as it written. The self-analysis enabled me to consciously introduce translation of Punjabi, Urdu, and Hindi words into all my writings. On the basis of his own practice and the practice of his colleagues, he sums up the role of Indo-Anglian writers in the following words. Indo-Anglian writers may be valued as interpreters and pioneers who brought the techniques of European literature into our country, whilst contributing Indian idioms and metaphor to English literature. So, Anand's style and language should be viewed in view of his theory of Indian English style. He uses Indianisms in dialogue aggressively. There is also an excessive use of Punjabi into English. His English has a distinctly Indian coloring. The English Anand uses in the narrative portions of his fiction is, on the whole, correct and idiomatic, but is certainly not the well of British English undefiled. It is certain distinct peculiarities which make its Indian origins unmistakably clear. Its oriental opulence, its passion to use more words than are absolutely necessary, and its fast galloping tempo typical of the speech of a race which perhaps talks too fast, too loud, and too much. The following passage provides a good example. As they sat or stood in the sun, showing their dark hands and feet, they had a curiously lackadaisical, lazy look about them. It seemed their insides were concentrated in the act of emergence of a new birth, as it were, from the raw, blink, wintry feeling in their souls to the world of warmth. The taint of the dark, narrow, dingy little prison cells of their one outdoor air. They were silent as if the act of liberation was too much for them to bear. The great life giver had cut the inscrutable knots that lied them up in themselves. It had melted the innermost parts of their being, and their souls started at the wonder of it all, the mystery of it, the miracle of it. In the lives of the riffraff, the scum of the earth, these dregs of humanity, only silence, grim silence, the silence of death, fighting for life, prevailed. Untouchable, page 24. Swiftness and abundance of adjectives in the above passage clearly speaks of the Indianness of the passage. Anand, however, can write inspired English as and when the occasion demands. Anand's aim is verisimilitude. Anand's British characters often speak different English from the Indian characters. In contrast to the speech of his British characters, the English of Anand's Indian characters is stamped through and through with an Indian coloring, secured in several ways. For example, see another passage. "There is a nut-cut rogue," she said. "All police constables are nut-cuts, but the police wallahs are the worst. Hey, my son, thou hast never learned all that since thou comest from Billet, Europe." It is not only Anand who uses such words. Kipling, in his scheme, had made use of numerous Hindi words to bring out Indianness. The charge, therefore, that Mulk Raj Anand invented mulkis, to quote Khushwant Anand's phrase, is quite untenable, this kind of stylistic device being of perfectly respectable British origin. But while Kipling makes a limited use of it, in Anand, the entire dialogue is permeated by a variety of colorful Indianism. These appears in diction and phraseology, idiom and imagery. There are expletives like eri, ve, he, wah, ohe, horrifies such as huzur, sarkar, maharaj, sahib, while these look entirely at home in Anand's fiction as occasional use of a word like sir, said the young man. A Kashmir Idol, The Barber's Trade Union and Other Stories, page 144, is immediately felt as a false touch. Words and phrases used in a complimentary sense in a peculiarly Indian way, such as they and their, used by a wife while referring to her husband, mother, father, as a form of address, to a socially superior person, brother, as indicating friendship, and heart squanderer, as applied to a beautiful woman. Colorful swear words wrecking of the rustic soil are so plentiful in Anand's fiction that a whole dictionary of choice terms of abuse could be compiled out of his work. These words range from the direct simplicity of prostitute, illegal begotten, brother-in-law, rape mother, rape sister, son of a swine, eater of your master, to the more imaginative complexity of cock-eyed son of a bow-legged scorpion. There are, again, English words which have become naturalized in Indian speech, suffering in that process a sea change in pronunciation. Words like Injun, gentleman, Lieutenant Governor, Government, Front are single examples of these. M. K. Nayak. Professor Nayak also says that literal translation of Hindi or Punjabi idioms and proverbs into English adds another colorful note. May the vessel of your life never float in the sea of existence. There is something black in the pulse. There is something fishy here. He was dead over her. He was madly in love with her. Come on my head, come on my eye, you are right welcome. Why do you eat my head? Why do you pester me? After eating 7 mice, the cat is going on a pilgrimage. No one called his own curds spoiled. It is easy to talk God after you have rolled the papers. Again, according to Professor Nayak, imagery is less colorful and plentiful in Anand than in Raja Rao, a difference which can easily be explained in terms of the individual vision and the choice of subject matter in the two novelties. Raja Rao's vision is primarily imaginative and poetic, and it naturally seeks expression in symbolic modes. Anand's humanism is rooted in the soil, demands faithfulness to the realities of the situation. This fundamental difference can be illustrated by comparing two passages from them, both describing the coming of the rains. Anand's imagery is also occasionally rooted in poetry. It is also occasionally lyrical. Mulkraj Anand's style topic is over.